morning in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very excited to be welcoming back into our studios today Seth Weidman, who is a colleague of mine from Carthage College. Seth is the assistant athletic director and also the head coach of both the men's and women's swimming and diving teams, which had a very, very good year. But Seth is here with more purpose than just crowing about all of the athletic successes at Carthage this year, which of course included a national championship for the men's volleyball team. Seth is here as a member of Kenosha's Safety Around Water Coalition. And this is a group that is working very, very hard to forward the important principle of using the waters of Lake Michigan safely, and avoiding certain dangers that can so easily and quickly lead to tragedy. And so that's how we're going to begin, and in whatever time remains at the end of the hour, we will look back on the year of athletics at Carthage and maybe talk a little bit about the place of athletics at a school like Carthage College. Seth Weidman, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Greg, thank you so much for having me. And as far as head coaching of the swim team goes, just the men's team, I'm incredibly fortunate to have Beth Della Rose be an amazing coach on the women's side as head coach.
So
We're incredibly lucky at Carthage to have as many head coaches as we have. To even sports like swimming and track and field, we're able to have a separate men's and women's coach. So just as you said, great success on both sides. We've had an amazing few years on our swimming and diving teams on both sides of the aisle.
Very good. Well, I know I saw that incorrect information in print someplace or on a screen thank you for correcting me.
No, it happens. It happens all the time. A sport like swimming and diving, it's so rare. And again, one of the things that we find so amazing about Carthage is the investment that they've made in all athletics, but especially in something like aquatics. It's very rare to have two head coaches of men's and women's swimming programs.
Well, we are glad that you are here to talk with us about all of that. But of course, we do want to begin with this matter of safety around water. First of all, tell us about the nature of your own involvement and kind of who is part of this coalition for safety around water.
Yeah, so a few years ago, and this was after a series of drownings. I should have looked back. I'm going to forget exactly which summer it was, but a few summers ago, there were a number of drownings along the lake, anywhere from the mouth of the Pike River near Pennoyer Park down to Eichelman Beach. Mm. There were a number of drownings. The one included a Indian Trails high school student, and it just kind of resurfaced this long-standing issue in Kenosha and any lakefront community that drownings, while not normal, they happen too often. And a group came together, I think kind of started with, you know, included the mayor's office and the coroner's office, because that was part of the interest in why these deaths are happening. Certainly police and fire were involved, and the YMCA, the Kenosha YMCA was the kind of the linchpin and the group that has really done a great job keeping it going over these years. But technically it's YMCA, fire, police, there are Kenosha City Aldermen involved, the Village of Summers have been involved, myself from Carthage College, Kenosha County, people from Kenosha County, and a really important one has been the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, which is an organization that has looked, that's really focused on all the Great Lakes, and they have a particular interest in Lake Michigan, because Lake Michigan, unfortunately, is the most deadly of the Great Lakes.
Wow.
There are about two times as many deaths in Lake Michigan than there are in the other Great Lakes. Part of that is because of the major cities that surround it and just the populations, right? But part of it are the unique wind patterns and wave patterns that happen on the lake. And so it tends to be an amazing lake to enjoy in so many ways, and it's so beautiful, and we can enjoy it with swimming and boating and all those things, but it also it deserves our respect as well. And so this Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project has done a great job kind of putting that message out all across the Midwest.
And one of the things that I think is probably important for us to highlight is that when these drownings occur, it isn't just tiny children. And it also is sometimes happening to people who are healthy and robust and maybe muscular and athletic and once in a while, I mean, even people who know how to swim. So in other words, nobody should feel completely complacent when it comes to this. I mean, even if you know something about swimming and are physically fit and so on, it doesn't mean that you can't fall prey to the perils of Lake Michigan.
Absolutely. And, you know, it really speaks to the idea that we talk about this a little bit more with children, is that, you know, no child is ever truly water safe. Right. You work to become safer in the water. And really, I would say that for any adult as well. You know, I'm certainly fortunate enough to be I wish I was as strong a swimmer as I was back when I was still competing. Right. But but, you know, I still consider myself a very strong swimmer. And there are absolutely days where I would not venture out into Lake Michigan. And there are times where I have to consider in any body of water, whether I'm going to go in and enjoy that water, or whether it's something I need to consider that it might not be the safest, you know, situation. But you're right. Treacherous conditions can really, affect anybody, no matter what their strength of swimming is.
Hmm. Maybe as we talk about this, we should begin with that very basic point about knowing how to swim and the fact that there are all kinds of resources available to which people, including parents, can avail themselves in order to themselves or for their children to learn how to swim. What would be a couple of the simplest and most accessible ways in which people can pursue swimming lessons and learn how to swim if they haven't managed to do that?
Yeah, so we're really fortunate that in this community we have quite a few really strong learn to swim programs. I guess I'll start. I can even just list a few of them off here. The YMCA, Kenosha YMCA, has a wonderful learn to swim program. Bradford High School in the summers, one of their summer programs is offering free swim lessons, and those are the only free swim lessons in the community. So I would really highlight Bradford's free swimming lessons. I know they tend to fill up very fast in the summer. They go for a few weeks at a time. Certainly Carthage College, so Beth Della Rose B. Murray, who I mentioned before, our women's swim coach and aquatics director, she has done an amazing job building a really fantastic learn-to-swim program that runs throughout the year. Swimtastic, which is out on Green Bay Road, in that plaza with Fresh Thyme and those other stores out there. Diver Dan's, which is actually pretty close to here, a scuba diving focused school, but certainly does learn to swim as well. And then out at the Recplex, another good learn to swim program out at the Recplex, a little bit further out into the county. So those resources are there. What I would say is that this is still a community, even with Lake Michigan and with the inland lakes that we have and the rivers to enjoy, swimming participation is still relatively low, from the swim lessons all the way up through more competitive swimming, and lifeguarding, and swim instructors. So we're short on those things. Kenosha really needs lifeguards, especially. It tends to be one of these really great first jobs. You know, when you're 15, 16 years old, it was one of my first jobs. Mm-hmm. I was really fortunate to be able to have that. But you need to be able to swim and be comfortable in the water to get that first really great lifeguarding job. And we're short on those right now. The two city pools that we have at Washington Park and Anderson Park, over the past few years have been understaffed. And I know they're struggling right now. You know, it's a challenge to staff those up. I know that similar issues at the YMCA and then also similar issues out in the county. So the county would really like to open up a couple of their inland lakes and beaches, but they can't open those up and have them truly be safe without hiring enough lifeguards. So That's just a quick call out there that I gave you a few places if you or a young person that's interested in a job like that. For us to be able to utilize all of these great pools in the community, we do need lifeguards to staff them.
Right, to really keep them safe. Mm-hmm. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Seth Weidman, assistant athletic coach at Carthage College, head coach of the men's swimming and diving team, and a member of Kenosha's Safety Around Water Coalition. I don't think we've mentioned yet that the month of May is Water Safety Month, so that's why even on this gloomy, rainy day in May, we are talking about swimming and swimming safely, and particularly swimming safely in Lake Michigan. Although I guess the Safety Around Water Coalition isn't necessarily limiting itself to that.
Yeah, it's not. You know, I think it started in that way, right? Again, with those pretty a high profile series of unfortunate drownings a few summers ago was what really kicked it into gear, and the main focus of that, especially the first year of the coalition, was this idea of the pier is not for play, which is basically, don't jump off the darn pier, right?
Right.
That's really the message. And, there are some long traditions in Kenosha where, teenagers have gone out and, played on the pier by jumping off into the currents. The real challenge there is that it can get really treacherous depending on how the winds are going and the currents are going. It's never, even when the lake kind of looks like glass out there with that channel coming into the harbor, and it's never as still as it looks. There's always a current there. Mm-hmm. And there very quickly can be a current that can get very, very unsafe. And so the focus was really on that first, and then it sort of expanded over the years. Once we recognized that message was hopefully getting out there, an ordinance was passed to allow police to issue citations when people do jump off the pier. A lot of new signage went up around the pier about the safety out there. And then also there were some life rings that got put out there so that somebody could throw a life ring if needed. So that went really well. And so as you said, it's kind of expanded beyond that. So it's not just the Lake Michigan necessarily, but it's kind of talking a little bit more about the inland lakes and rivers that we have, and talking about just general water safety and knowledge around staying safe, but also being able to enjoy the water, getting to a point where you can enjoy the water in either a recreational way, a fitness level, or a competitive level, like we do at Carthage.
So, of course, one of the first steps, as we already talked about, is to learn how to swim. I mean, don't go into the water until you know how to swim. And, of course, once you get in the water, sometimes trouble happens. And you were telling me before we went on the air that one way in which you want to be of help today is to help people understand what it looks like, what it sounds like when somebody is drowning. I was sharing with you that famous moment, one of many, many famous moments from the movie Jaws, when Brody, the sheriff or whoever he is on the beach and a shark attack has already happened, and there's all these people playing at the beach and in the water despite his protests. And every time he hears anything that sounds like somebody might be in trouble, you know, his eyes go there immediately and almost frantically, and kind of underscores the fact that a lot of times you can't tell when somebody's just messing around and having fun or if somebody is in genuine distress. So what does it look like when somebody is really in trouble, and in particular when someone is about to or actually drowning?
Yeah, so that, you know, that scene from Jaws just brings up such it really puts it into puts into words that feeling that that lifeguards in particular have when they're trying to protect, you know, and keep patrons at a pool or at a beach safe. Your eyes are often drawn to those loud noises, right? The screams that a kid has, or because you sense that could mean danger or trouble, and it certainly can, and you have to pay attention to those. The reality often, though, is that drowning tends to be pretty silent. It tends to be something that a layperson doesn't always have the knowledge to look for when it comes to what is safe and what is not safe swimming. So back to the idea of somebody is loud, you know, the ideal drowning victim, if you could call it that, is a victim who does have a certain level of swimming proficiency, and recognizes they're in trouble and is able to sort of reach out and yell and call for help. It's hard to say that anything is wonderful around drowning, but that would be sort of the perfect situation. Right.
The best scenario, right.
In reality, often someone who is not as proficient in the water just very quickly and very quietly can be kind of overcome by the water. And that can be just, you know, water that's completely still and just over their head, and they can't get their footing and sort of, you know, body leans underneath them, head leans back, and they just sort of quietly might be able to call a little bit for help, but pretty quickly are just underwater. And you tend to see that the most with children, as you can imagine. You know, very young children can just quickly get over their heads. But even with adults, you can see that sometimes. And so just all the more reason to be really mindful and careful about your swimming proficiency level and those of your family before you attempt to swim. And that goes for even if there are lifeguards around. You know, the best most well-staffed pools and beaches in the world still have drownings because sometimes it can happen so silently and so quickly.
Wow, that's very scary and something for us to be really, really mindful of. You were saying that most lifeguards, including you, I suppose you're still a certified lifeguard, maybe.
I am, yeah.
And that so when you're at the beach or in a swimming pool or whatever and very much not on duty, you still, in a sense, sort of are. I mean, always being vigilant.
Right. It. I won't say it's ruined vacations of mine, but there are times where, you know, you're just trying to enjoy a pool or a beach somewhere, and you just always kind of feel like you're on high alert. And I really did feel that from the time I think I was 16 when I first got my Red Cross lifeguard certification, and you feel that right away, even as a young person. And I felt it even more probably about 8 or so years ago. I became a lifeguard instructor through the Red Cross, so I can also teach and certify lifeguards, and that just even more so brought out that idea, you know, as you're going through that curriculum, that really just staying vigilant, and sometimes you get frustrated with the parents or, you know, of children or the lifeguards maybe at a certain place that aren't necessarily doing, you know, aren't doing their job to the level that you might want to see. But yeah, it's something that is always on the mind of any lifeguard.
That mantle of responsibility is, yeah, really significant. Well, let's talk about a couple of the kind of bullet points that the Safety Around Water Coalition has come up with. And these are really terrific because they're almost poetic, almost like nursery rhymes or something. I mean, that they really kind of stick with you. And, of course, that's the whole point when especially you're trying to get young people to be aware of what it takes to really be safe. And maybe one of the most basic ones we should talk about is one you say, which is, when in doubt, don't go out.
Right. Yeah, so that's a huge one. I think that's just a sort of the perfect overarching theme here, right? That any body of water that can be a pool, that could be a friend's backyard pool, even, or a neighbor's. That could be a river, a little stream, but especially when we're talking about Lake Michigan, if there's any doubt about safe conditions. If there's any doubt about temperature, often there aren't a lot of very warm Lake Michigan months right. here. We're lucky some years that it gets pretty comfortable by June or, by the end of June. But sometimes it's really just kind of like mid-July to late August that it's really comfortable enough and safe enough to be swimming regularly in the water. A lot of times kids don't recognize that. They're ready to jump in and splash. Even as someone who loves the water and loves swimming, I am much more timid to get in a cold pool or body of water than a little kid who just wants to splash around. So being mindful of that, I think, is important. It's also, we live along a portion of Lake Michigan that one of the reasons it stays cold, another reason why it can be a bit less safe even than other parts of the lake is that there's a pretty significant drop off pretty early once you get out into the lake. It gets very deep very quickly off of Kenosha, even far more so than Chicago and even more so than a lot of Milwaukee. It just happens to be this kind of drop off close to here. So
it's fairly close to shore and also quite abrupt from what you're describing.
Correct. Yep. And so, again, it's just another reason to be mindful about what the conditions are in the particular area that you are. And if you don't quite know, then it's probably worth not going out. And some of the signage that the city and others have been able to put up over the years, especially close to the pier and close to the Pike River, the Pike River mouth, have done a good job communicating that about mm-hmm. that idea of when in doubt, don't go out.
And I suppose that has a lot to do with not only the water itself and the conditions and the weather and so on, but also who you're with. And if you're not with people that you trust and who are competent to help you if you get in trouble, and if you're not competent to help them, then maybe it's not a good idea to be venturing out into the water.
That's exactly right. 'Cause very quickly it can turn into it can go from one person being in peril to two or more, right?
Yeah.
You have somebody trying to save someone and there are just awful and really tragic stories about then multiple people drowning from that happening. Yep.
One of the other really basic points has to do with the aforementioned pier. And the saying is the pier is not for play. And of course, that's probably a hard lesson to teach. And sometimes it's only through real tragedies that this can finally start to sink in, that you just can't mess around with and you should not be jumping off piers. So what is it? I mean, at a glance, a pier does not look like that big a deal. It just looks like a big dock. But there are things about piers, and especially our big pier that juts way out into Lake Michigan, that are incredibly treacherous and much more so than might appear to be at the naked eye. What are the dangers that are so serious?
Yeah, so the main issue is that there are different winds. So different prevailing winds can be happening, at any given time along the shore here, and that can affect wave patterns. So, there are onshore winds, there are offshore winds, and those are the ones that go more east-west. Then there are longshore winds, and those come down north or south. And often they are coming from the north, and they're kind of shooting down south. So if you're sort of picturing from Carthage College, down to the harbor and where that pier is that we're talking about. That's just a very short distance, but you're talking about hundreds of miles that wind has come down the lake, over the lake and causing waves and different current patterns. And those longshore currents get especially treacherous. They're not that treacherous as they are. You need to be mindful of them, but they become very treacherous when they hit up against structures that are jutting out. Then it becomes a structural current. And the challenge with those structural currents is that sometimes you can see it. It's very obvious. Some of the coolest sights, I'll be honest, in Kenosha are when those are happening and you go over near the pier and you just see this sort of washing machine cycle going. And it's really cool to watch, but nobody would ever dream of getting in the water when it's like that. And that's when it's very visible.
Right. Right? Well, actually, and I don't mean to contradict you, but I could imagine somebody thinking that looks like something you do at great, like Wisconsin Dells or something. I mean, it almost looked like a ride.
It's true, right? Or you grab a boogie board and ride it.
No one in their right mind, however, would jump into the water there. Yes.
So, you know, there are times where it's very visible, but then there are also times where it's not. You know, it can be similarly treacherous, but be sort of underneath, right? And so it's those structural currents that are so, so dangerous right off of the pier. And again, sometimes you can see them, sometimes you can't. And even when those structural currents, you know, the longshore currents are butting up against that and turning into these churning structural currents, even when that isn't happening as significantly, you know, it's still a channel coming in from the greatest of the Great Lakes, you know, in the Midwest here, into our harbor, right? And flowing in and out there. And so there's always a current that is around, whether you can see it or not. There's always a current that's kind of going around that pier where the North Point Lighthouse is. Mm.
So people need to be really, really careful. And my understanding is that it is, I guess it's against the law to jump off the pier, and you can really be leveled with a very serious, serious fine if you're caught doing it.
That's right. And, you know, I've been able to talk to some of the police officers who are involved in the Safety on Water Coalition, and they're ready to issue those. They're not holding back anymore. I think they spent a year where they were giving more warnings, and the past couple of years, though, they're not shy about issuing those citations, and they tend to get there quickly. When someone is calling, and, you know, a concerned citizen will just see that some young people are doing that and are concerned for their safety, they'll call, and in our experience, the police department has been there pretty quickly and has, you know, been able to communicate and issue those citations.
Right. So unless you enjoy the thought of paying a $1,000 fine, it's really important to not ignore those warnings and all of that signage. If somebody ultimately finds themselves in distress, whether they've jumped off a pier or for some other reason finds themselves in distress, you have important words of warning or advice for people who might be with them or observing them. And that phrase is reach and throw, don't go. So this one has to be explained a little more. Take that apart for us.
Yeah, so it kind of goes back to that idea we were talking about with when in doubt, don't go out, and just being mindful about the level of swimming proficiency and safety around water that is with whoever is with that person who's in distress. So, you know, I was alluding to the fact that, you know, in a situation, you could go from one drowning victim to multiple if somebody goes in after them. Right. So that idea of reach, throw, don't go is that ideally you would have some sort of life-saving device like a life ring, like a life preserver, life ring, that you could toss out to somebody, or a line or something that you could toss out to somebody. Ideally, you can stay on land and just reach them, right? You'd be surprised at how, you know, when somebody is struggling, often they're pretty close to you know, an outlet or help or safety. And sometimes just being able to reach to them either with a hand or with something can help. But certainly the life rings that were put out a few years ago along that pier could quite literally be lifesavers. I mean, they're there for a reason, and while they're checked on and made sure that they're not tampered with, they're there and should be used if you suspect that somebody needs the help. So that idea of reach, throw, don't go is that you don't want to put yourself in a situation. If you're the person trying to help, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you become another victim.
Right. As I was reading up on this one, an interesting point was made that never would have dawned on me, which is be careful if you get to that point where if you can't reach them, so you're throwing some kind of flotation device at them, just be careful that you're not throwing it right at them to the point where it might hit them and stun them or whatever, and that could make the situation even worse. That never would have dawned on me. I would have probably just aimed right for them, mm-hmm. and that can be tricky. That can be counterproductive.
Right. You know, that's such a great point, especially with these, you know, these life rings are you know, they're substantial. And so that's one of the reasons why they float so well and can be a great tool. So yes, throwing it near them is very important. You know, if you just had a rope or something like that, throwing it closer to them, and you wouldn't have to be as concerned about possibly hitting them. But if it's any kind of device like that, it also just brings up the point that while you should do as much as you can to try to help that person, calling 911 immediately is also just should be sort of the top of list. Mm-hmm. As you or anyone else is doing those other things to try to help them, you should be trying to get our amazing dive rescue teams who just do just an unbelievable job getting out there as fast as they can. But as you can imagine, that's still not that fast, right?
Right.
And so trying to do what you can to help is important, but calling 911 early is also important. Mm.
Finally, we need to talk about the three Fs: flip, float, and follow. And a couple of those will probably make sense. Maybe the third one for sure needs some explanation. But this is also of fundamental importance for so many people who might find themselves in a lot of different difficult situations.
Yeah, this might be, I think, the most important one. So it's being used more and more in water safety curriculum that is tied to general community safety curriculum, like fire safety, like police safety. Being careful with talking to strangers, that type of thing that happens with, fire and police educating children, especially elementary school kids. It's also similar to that idea of stop. It's kind of the stop, drop, and roll of swimming, right? So everyone knows stop, drop, and roll when it comes to fire safety. And the flip, float, and follow, I think, is becoming more and more that. And I'll use a quote, actually. So Dave Benjamin is one of the founders of that Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project that I was talking about before. And he puts it into really good words, I think, when he talks about flip, float, and follow. So he says, if you are ever struggling in water over your head, flip, float, and follow. Flip over onto your back and float. Float to keep your head above water. Float to calm yourself down from the fear and panic of drowning. Float to conserve your energy. And then follow the safest path out of the water. Float first, exit strategy second. If you want to survive a drowning incident, you have to stay at the surface and continue breathing for as long as possible. As long as you are floating, you are alive and buying more time for rescue to arrive.
That does say it all, doesn't it? Wow. So if people want to explore this a little further or kind of review what you've shared today, is there a place where at least a lot of this information can be easily found?
Yeah, so I would use the Kenosha YMCA's website as a hub. And I don't have the exact link on me right now. You can easily go onto their website or just Google Kenosha YMCA Safety Around Water. And they have so many great resources on there, directly related both to this local coalition, but also water safety more in general around the country.
Very good. Seth Weidman is the Assistant Athletic Director at Carthage College and also a member of Kenosha's Safety Around Water Coalition. Because May is Water Safety Month, we wanted to have a conversation with Seth about all of this. Seth, I thought it would really be interesting in our closing minutes to talk about a little more of what you do at Carthage, particularly as Assistant Athletic Director. As you have to kind of work with athletes and athletic programs, even beyond your own men's swimming team, what kind of responsibilities are on your shoulders as assistant athletic director?
Yeah, so there are times, and this will be a perfect opportunity to mention again our amazing men's volleyball national championship team. But when that happened about a month or so ago now, a few weeks ago, that was an example of an event that. And I should mention Carthage hosted that, right? So that was one thing that made it even more special was that we hosted both the the semifinals and then the Final Four tournament, sort of back-to-back weekends. And so, you know, you never quite know whether you're even going to be in the tournament when you get the bid to host. And so then we, you know, obviously we're fortunate to make the tournament and then make the Final Four and then win the national championship. So, you know, something like that, that's a good example of kind of an all hands on deck, right? So just a lot of organizing. You know, those of us who have administrative roles, you know, we took on different roles when it came to planning that event. We took on different roles when it came to hosting the Final Four institutions that were there. You know, I was in charge of hosting Stevens Institute of Technology and just making sure that everything was set and ready for them the whole time. So, you know, there are duties like that that come up when we're hosting big, very athletic-focused events. The other piece of what I do is a lot more on the, I guess, kind of, you know, student success, student engagement side of things. So one thing that kind of led to this role was the past few years I've been our athletic diversity and inclusion designee. Oh. And so every NCAA institution, this came about 2 years ago. We were a little ahead of the curve with naming somebody in that role. But every NCAA athletic department has to have a diversity and inclusion designee. And that person's role is really to make sure that there's a smooth kind of through line and flow of information and programming that goes from the NCAA down to the conference office, which is our CCIW conference, and then down to our institution and our college. And so being really involved in different diversity and inclusion initiatives over the years, sort of more broadly working with, you know, Dr. Michelle Hancock, Roger Moriano and Cecily Hunter when they were here, you know, filling those roles over the years. I was doing a lot of that work kind of on the side of athletics, and that sort of naturally led into me doing it a little bit more for athletics. And so some of the things that have happened around that are for our staff, you know, just this past year, bringing in the Racial Equity Institute, which is out of North Carolina. KUSD has used them and leaned really heavily on them for their equity inclusion efforts. I was fortunate enough to be able to bring them in through a partnership with the Aspire Center and our admissions office to bring them in to give us some programming for our staff in those three departments. And so we were able to do that in December, which was really wonderful. I was able to bring in a really amazing speaker, Dr. Derek Greenfield. He's served many roles in different higher ed institutions and worked really closely with a lot of NCAA institutions about both diversity and inclusion efforts, but also kind of from a student and a student athlete point of view, a real sense of belonging at their institutions and a real sense of engagement and what they're going to be doing beyond their time at a place like Carthage. And so he came in about a month ago, month or two ago, and gave an amazing presentation to hundreds of our student athletes, which was really wonderful. So that was a partnership with the Aspire Center as well, because he was very focused on that kind of thing. So those are a couple of examples of just the types of things that don't always feel 100% related to athletics, but are so important to make sure that athletics are tied in with, because, you know, at a school like Carthage, at least a third of our student population are student athletes. You know, we have a school, as we both know, of somewhere around 2,700 undergrads, and we tend to start our fall semester with between 800 and 850 student athletes.
Wow.
And so it's a very large population that, you know, we feel strongly that the athletic department needs to be kind of in line and enhancing, you know, and sometimes adding to the amazing resources that we can give them at the college in general.
Right. Not long ago, I replayed an interview with somebody that I don't remember if you overlapped at all at Carthage, with someone named Tim Rux, who was the longtime football coach at Carthage and sadly no longer with us. But I replayed an interview I did with him some years ago, in which he was really focusing on one of his most important goals, which was that every guy on his football team was also taking their responsibilities as a student as seriously as they took their exploits on the football field. And we kind of talked about all that. And I remember in that interview, one of the things he mentioned with some pride, was that at least in general, the football players during the fall season, during football season, had a higher collective GPA than the overall student body, which really flies in the face of the careless assumptions that a lot of people might make about whether or not a good football player can be a good student. There's no question about that. And that it was then, during the football season, where there was a very concerted effort to give attention to that. That's where the football players did the best. Where they wouldn't do quite so well was in the spring, when they didn't have the football season and those distractions, but also didn't have the framework within which to work. I wonder if that sounds familiar. And first of all, are there other teams in which there is a very structured approach to making sure that the team is studying together and being attentive to to those responsibilities? Or is that kind of left to various coaches to handle that as they see fit?
Yeah. So, first off, leave it to Tim Rucks to make such a great point. And yes, so I did overlap with Coach Rucks. He was involved in hiring me. So, oh. You know, one of my, you know, fondest initial memories was, when Bob Bond, our former and sadly not with us anymore athletic director, invited me up to interview, and I, you know, as part of that day, I had lunch with him and Tim Rucks and Leanne Ulmer, who's still our women's volleyball coach. And it was wonderful to get to know him and work with him that first year. Sadly, it was towards the end of that first year that I overlapped with him that Tim passed away. But it's such a good point that I would say that without actually looking at the numbers and digging through the data, that is quite typical that most athletic programs tend to have, especially when they're in their season, tend to have their highest team GPAs throughout the academic year. And often those tend to be higher than the general student body. And I do think the biggest part of it is the structure that it gives student athletes. And there are absolutely other co-curricular activities. You're involved with many of them that probably have a similar type of structure where it sometimes can feel a little counterintuitive that oh my gosh, they're so busy. How could they get everything done? But it's when they are busy that they're able to actually structure their time well and sort of think clearly about their goals and what they want to be doing. Sometimes when there's an off season, and I'm sure that can be the same for theater, for music, there are off seasons here and there, right? And those tend to be the times where you can get a little bit behind on things because there's just more free time. And so I absolutely see it in the swimming season. We see it in almost every sport. Football, mainly because of the sheer number of student athletes, right? You know, you have, on average, you have between 130 and 160 athletes coming in each year, starting the football season. By the end of football season, sometimes there aren't as many, but, that's so many athletes that's a sport around the country that really has used that idea of structured time, kind of study tables, if you want to call them, sometimes on a day off, sometimes a different time. And those can work really effectively. Most of our programs at Carthage, and I'd say most athletic programs around the country, especially at the Division III level, don't necessarily utilize those sort of department-wide, and we don't either. So I think one real draw to coming to a place like Carthage, but also coaching at a place like Carthage, is that those resources are there for every student, right? And, you know, just speaking for the men's swim team, there are times when I'm certainly feeling like, gosh, maybe I should have some sort of study tables or maybe I should at least be connecting the athletes with each other. That's kind of what we do a little bit more. We do it on a case-by-case basis. And we kind of remind them throughout the entire course of the year of all of those resources they have, the writing center, the tutoring center, their relationships that they build with their professors or we want them to be building with their faculty members. Because those things happen ideally in an organic way and are kind of built in already as part of their education. Our department doesn't have to do quite as much of that. But there are teams that still utilize that sort of more traditional study table approach.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to see that gratifying success, and nice to see a lot of athlete names on the dean's list and so on, mm-hmm. and graduating with honors and so on. I met some student athletes at commencement, and my job was to direct them to the table where they could get their honors cords before receiving their diplomas, and there was more than a few. We've already mentioned the fact that the Carthage men's volleyball team won the national championship, and actually their second in a row. So hats off to their coach, JW, and the many talented athletes who were part of that. It was a great year for your men's swimming team as well, conference champs. Are there a couple of other successes you want to quickly highlight in terms of Carthage athletics this past academic year?
Absolutely. So, yes, let's start, again, a shout-out to men's volleyball. On the national championship, they also won the CCIW championship as well. Our men's swimming and diving team was fortunate enough to win a conference championship, and our women's golf team also won the CCIW conference championship as well, which is very exciting. And then beyond sending some of those teams along, certainly golf was able just last week, or was it 2 weeks ago? Very recently, was down in Texas for the national tournament. So they were able to send a team down for that. Men's volleyball obviously sent their team along and won the team title. There were some individuals. There were six individuals. There were four track and field athletes who participated in national championships. And actually, there are a few more that are, and that was indoor, I should say. For outdoor in the spring, they're actually there right now. So they just traveled yesterday. So there are a few of those athletes. There was a women's wrestler who wrestled at their national level tournament. And then on the men's swimming and diving side, Mitchell Mages for my team went on to our national championship after our conference win. About a few weeks later, he went on to nationals in Indianapolis and garnered another All-American accolade for his 100 breaststroke. He finished in the top 16 of the field, which gets you All-American honors. So
wow.
That was very exciting.
Very, very good. So you have the summer off, sort of, but I suppose for you and other coaches, it isn't entirely a summer off.
Right. We like to call it, you know, it's flex time. It's certainly not off time. You know, the traditional path is to be focused on recruiting, which is certainly important. You know, recruiting doesn't ever stop. And to be honest, it tends to be the heaviest right when we're in our seasons. And so that's both frustrating, but also it's just a reality. But a lot of the groundwork that you can make with sort of getting interest in the institution and in your program tends to happen in the summer here. So there's some traveling that happens when it comes to recruiting. There's other traveling. You know, there are some other just higher ed related conference type things that I often go to. One thing that's coming up, if I can give a quick plug. So the annual Firebird Classic, which is our Carthage Athletics golf outing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's happening June 27th. So Monday, June 27th at Strawberry Creek. So that's something where we'll all be busy. That's another all hands on deck type of thing where we're all either helping out or we're golfing with a foursome here or there. There's still opportunities to golf, dine, and sponsor at various levels. You can go to Carthage Athletics homepage for more information on that. So that's something coming up next month that we're very excited about.
Fantastic. And hopefully you'll have a much lovelier day than today happens to be.
Right.
So very good. Well, Seth Weidman, it's been great to reconnect, and congrats to you and all of the talented and skilled coaches and athletes who have gained such success over this past academic year. And of course, even for those where in terms of wins and losses or season records or whatever, even if the success wasn't tangible in those ways, there's so much to gain from just being active in this particular way. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to reconnecting with you from time to time as events warrant at Carthage. And I want to thank you again for being part of the morning show today here on WGTD.
Thanks, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll be talking about the Racine Theater Guild's wildly popular production of the musical Mamma Mia. It opened last week to rave reviews and to nearly sold out audiences. And there are three more weekends to go. And we'll be talking with Doug Instanis, Elise Sparks, director and cast member, and also Marilee Astorino, choreographer for the production. And on Friday, my conversation with Matt Richtel, a reporter for the New York Times, talking about his brand new book called Inspired, a truly fascinating book about the wonders of creativity. It's exactly 9 o'clock. Well, it's a minute before 9 o'clock, actually. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and the program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. And don't forget that you can subscribe to the Morning Show podcast to get a different Morning Show 7 days a week. Look for the Morning Show with Greg Berg.